What's up, everybody? It is Chris Aiken from Aftershocks TV and the Classic Metal Show, and just wanted to give you a quick heads up before this next video of my probably my most well-known book, Call Me Chris, A Tale of Healing, Recovery, Selfishness, and Resolve. It's a fun one, all right. It's about the burn accident that I was in 1994 and how I came back from it and what a nightmare it was. It's a tough read, but it's probably the best reviewed book that I've had of the six. So I invite you to check it out. Call Me Chris, A Tale of Healing, Recovery, Selfishness, and Resolve. Available now on Amazon.com, as well as my website, ChrisAikenBooks.com. You know what else is available right now? This episode that you actually came to see. Here it is.
It's Megadeth right here on your Classic Metal Show with Peace Sells, but who the fuck is buying?
Yeah. I don't know who's even selling it at this point.
There's no peace. No justice, no peace, man.
Well, I heard that Black Lives Matter is getting a Nobel Peace Prize.
That's what I've heard. You know, after all the carnage that they've caused through 2020 with all the cities on fire and the destruction and, you know, the upheaval, you know, they're a peaceful group.
You say carnage. I say awareness.
Right. Very peaceful.
Yeah. All that awareness they made. They drummed up awareness, Neely, of a bad problem.
You know, of all the racial injustice out there in the world.
Yeah. Boy, does that, if that doesn't fucking end the value of the Nobel Peace Prize, nothing does.
Well, the value of the Nobel Peace Prize ended, you know, a decade ago when Barack Obama was, you know, sworn as president, and they already nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize, and he had accomplished nothing.
Right.
That's when it ended.
Yeah.
It was just a token type thing, and it's not meant anything since. You know, Donald Trump basically negotiated peace in the Middle East. There were no new wars during his administration, and you know, he brokered peace, and he was nominated twice and didn't get it.
Well, you know, why would he get it when you can have people like Black Lives Matter getting it? I support that.
No, as our good friend Jericho would say, certain Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, CBLM, congratulations.
Right. So that has zero credibility now. It's like being elected to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't have any value at all.
None. You know, a band like a Judas Priest, who basically has been, you know, the forefathers of anything that's hard rock, heavy metal, new world, the new world.
New World Order or what?
No. The invasion of heavy metal.
Oh, the new wave of British heavy
metal. There you go. That's what I was looking for. But, you know, they were the forefathers of that. They couldn't get elected to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Well, and if any band of any credibility or any band of note should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it should be Judas Priest.
Right.
But nope, not happening. Not on my watch, pal.
Yeah.
So.
Well, congratulations. That's all I've got to say.
Right.
I'm trying to stay positive in this new Biden administration. I'm trying to find the unity, Neely.
You mean conformity?
Unity. No. You say conformity. I say unity.
I say conformity. You say unity.
Unity.
Yeah.
I'm uniting my bad think, my wrong think, with their correct think.
Right. Right. Just swallow it like tripe.
That's right.
Just swallow it down. Ridiculous. All right. Well, this is something that you and I kind of talked about a little bit earlier this week, and I wanted to bring this up on the show.
Okay.
Regardless of your thoughts on Netflix or not, they do offer some pretty good content from time to time, depending on what your watching habits are.
Sure.
And being that you and I really enjoy the whole documentary series type thing, you and I both watched a thing just called Crack.
Yes.
And they talked about the history of cocaine and the use, you know, and the rise of crack, the cheap alternative to cocaine.
Right.
And what an epidemic that caused.
Right.
And, you know, I want to get your thoughts on this because one of the cities that was prominently featured in this documentary was Chicago.
Right.
And the thing that from the very jump of this whole documentary, when they were talking about, you know, the epidemic that crack had become and, you know, what a blight it was on the American public, regardless of your ethnicity, as it were.
Right.
All they talked about was the failure of the government. And a lot of people, well, everybody who voluntarily chose to imbibe in crack, nobody forced that on them.
Okay.
They did that on their own. And, you know, there were lives that were destroyed from crack, or be it crack or any other drug.
Right.
And I know that you had kind of voiced to me your thoughts on this, that I didn't feel sorry for any one of these fucking people.
No, not at all. I don't feel bad. I don't feel bad, you know, and I hate to always bang the behavior drug or drum, rather. I really do. You know, on some level, I would love to feel like, I would love to understand the theory of situation and environment and blah, 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 blah. But no, I can't. Not in this circumstance. I can't. You know, in this circumstance, putting a crack pipe in your mouth is 100% behavior. I don't care if you're rich or poor. You certainly understand that it's not going to end well. There's enough proof there's enough video, there's enough proof, there's enough examples in any neighborhood, in anybody's life, within people's families, etc., that if you start smoking crack, if you start shooting the heroin, if you start using meth, if you start any of those things, it's going to do nothing but be bad. There's so many examples. There's no examples, zero, where somebody's like, you know what? I smoke crack 3 times a day and now I'm a millionaire. There's no examples of that. None.
Right.
But there's a billion examples of, yeah, I shot H one time and I was hooked and now I'm a fucking, now I've, you know, lost my feet and I'm dying. You know, that's so, I don't have any compassion for anybody that's, you know, that starts smoking crack. None. And maybe in this documentary, I might have had an ounce, but just an ounce, just the slightest ounce. But once people started dying over it, yeah, okay. If you can't get out at that point, then you're stupid too.
Right.
You know.
Well, one of the stark contrasts that I saw in this video is that, you know, this came on the tail end of the excess of the 80s, which obviously cocaine was, you know, was on the rise during the 80s because that was a very prosperous time in this country. And, you know, there were some people that were making a lot of money, be it, you know, the economy was booming and the stock market was booming and there was, you know, a lot of opportunity out there. And cocaine was the drug of choice.
Sure.
And I what I found interesting about this documentary, if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. It's actually pretty well done.
Sure.
The disparity between, well, cocaine was the rich man's drug. Yeah. And crack was affordable for the quote unquote, the African American community, which more or less was saying, we just accept our position in society as just being poor.
Mm-hmm.
And we should enjoy the same highs that the rich man enjoys, and crack afforded that to us.
Right.
That's what I took away from this.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that, you know, they tried to, what do you want to call, point out the disparity between people who are prosperous and people who are poor. Mm-hmm. But the poor people ended up even more in bad shape.
Yeah.
Because of their life choices in imbibing with crack.
Right.
And there were people, you know, that they interviewed in this video or this documentary, which I thought was pretty cool, that it was just like, well, you know, I was hooked on crack. I sucked dick for crack.
Right.
You know, and I'm laughing about this, but it's unfortunate about this, that they did find people that are still alive today that somehow, some way that they were able to get out of that rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
of their addiction and are able to tell their story today. But the story is that, well, the government didn't do enough. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because you had the presence of mind of contacting Freeway Rick Ross.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When he was available to talk.
Right.
And you were able to knock down an interview with him. How many years ago was that?
Ooh, 13, maybe 14.
It's been that long.
It's been a while. Yeah,
it has been a while. I agree. You were able to talk to one of the biggest drug dealers in the U.S. of all time.
Right.
And this guy is part of this documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about his playing his part in this whole crack epidemic.
Yeah.
Along with the whole cocaine epidemic and stuff of the late 80s into the early 90s. And this guy is a quote unquote, and I'm going to use a Jericho Greenism,
mm-hmm.
a person of color.
Yeah.
Who was just as guilty as anyone.
Sure.
for distributing this poison into society. And he was very wealthy over it. This guy claimed in this video that he was doing $1 million worth of business a day.
Right. Yeah, he was making some coin, that's for sure. You know. Yeah, he was making some bank.
Yeah. But the thing that I liked about this documentary is that they showed how wide reaching that this distribution, distribution channels were.
Yes, network or whatever.
The sure. network stretched all the way from like LA all the way to the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the people who are intimately involved with this, these people were making just ungodly amounts of money.
Yeah. They were at Escobar level.
They were
at that same, maybe not quite as much as Escobar, but they were right. I mean, they were the American version of Escobar, of his cartel, of the whatever, the Medellin cartel.
Yeah. So this whole blame game of, well, the government should have done this or they should have done that. It's just like, well, nobody forced you to put that crack pipe in your mouth.
Right.
And made you do this. And one of the earliest comments in the video, I don't recall the person who they were talking to. They were talking about how the introduction of crack, quote unquote, affected the African American community the most.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, why is that?
Yeah.
Because I was around. I was around during the 80s when the cocaine epidemic, or, you know, cocaine was very fashionable.
Sure.
And I was around during the early part of the 90s when crack was on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
Was it my white skin that said, hey, don't do that? Or was it just good common sense or good upbringing or what? What made me say, you know what? I don't want to you know, suck on a crack pipe dick.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it was just, I mean, there's a couple layers to it. There's certainly you had common sense. You know, you had, you see, it's hard to base things on you because you never tried anything.
Well, but, I agree. But again, I'm going to give that credit to my parents.
Sure. I mean, I'll admit freely, I snorted some coke. I didn't mind coke at all. And we used to take it and put on your finger and on your gums. And, you know, we used to call that gummies, and we used to do gummies and,
all right,
you know, get your whole fucking face numb. You know, it was like the quick way to get it into your system real fast.
Okay.
So I liked cocaine. I'm not going to lie. I did. I wish I wasn't a big fat tub of shit so I could do some more without threat of dying, but
all right,
you know, but I can't. So, but I did enjoy it. I'm not going to lie. You know, the thing is, it didn't come to our neighborhoods either. You know, that's a whole nother thing. I don't know about you, but I never remember anybody selling crack or, you know, coke dealers or nothing in the neighborhoods. You know, and I don't know if that's proper policing or if that's just that, you know, the people that would be dealing it just knew that our neighborhoods would not be good for it or what, but for me personally, it never came into the neighborhood.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I don't know. Did you ever see crack dealers in your neighborhood?
Oh, of course not.
That's a, you know, I never saw any, you know, dude, it was hard enough for me to find a supply to sell pot myself. It was hard. You know, you had to know a bunch of people to, you know, it's not like I could have one supplier for me to sell. And I was a low level guy selling, you know, just selling pot around school. You know, I can't. And just to sell pot around school, I had to have like four or five different people to score pot from. And they weren't just hanging out. You know, it was always had to make a phone call and then meet somebody at the, you know, the last parking spot at the back of the McDonald's so that we could, you know, make the exchange and all that other horseshit.
It's all right.
You know, but it just wasn't in our neighborhoods. And I think that's I don't want to say it's completely behavioral, because I think one of the big differences and one of the core differences between the ghetto neighborhoods, and, you know, I obviously didn't live in a ghetto neighborhood, but the police just weren't putting up with it in our neighborhoods, where the police in, you know, in really shitty ghetto neighborhoods across the country, you know, they just want to get home at night. So they're not getting out of their car because somebody's fucking selling a $5 crack rock. They're just not going to do it.
Right.
You know, where in my neighborhood, if they had any inkling at all that somebody was dealing crack, they would have fucking brought the hammer down to make an example, to keep it out of our neighborhood. You know, big difference. So, you know, I don't want to say it's 1,000% behavioral, but I'll say it's 998% behavioral.
All right. Well, what kept you personally from, say, picking up a crack pipe and deciding I'm going to try this out?
Never had it presented to me.
All right.
Honestly, I probably would have if it was presented to me. I'm quite sure if somebody would have said, hey, here's crack, you want to try it, I would have at a party or something. Fuck yeah. No question in my mind. Dude, I shot heroin, for God's sakes. You know, I stuck that needle in my arm twice. So a crack pipe? Yeah, I would have done that. I'm glad I didn't. But, you know, it just wasn't present. You know, it was at that time, it was not something that roamed my neighborhood, and it wasn't something that was available in Kent State, where I used to party a lot, was up on the campus of Kent State. You know, it just wasn't prevalent there. And we might have been, I might have been a little bit, just a hair before that time. You know, I mean, my running around time was like 84, 85, 86. And 80, that's right about the time it debuted in LA, isn't it?
Well, crack didn't really hit until either like 89 or 90.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, cocaine was still very prevalent.
Sure.
But it kind of started in about 89 or 90, around 91, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I remember, I mean, coke was available, at least in my, you know, when we would go party on a Friday night. not always, but if you went to a house party, there was usually some Coke somewhere at a house party, you know, and that was when I was a junior in high school, like 85, you know, there was usually some Coke at a house party, or definitely there was Coke at the college parties. So it was available on some level. I don't ever remember crack or crack pipes or, you know, any such thing. I don't even remember, you know, really cooking. I don't even, you know, I don't remember cooking Coke or any of that stuff ever. You know, it was just, you know, white powder lines. It was like, all right, cool. Let's rock. Let's party. Why is my heart beating so fast? What's going on here?
Right. So did you have any thoughts on the whole, you know, the documentary? You said you watched it, so.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I was fascinated to see it. And, you know, like you said, you know, seeing Freeway Rick Ross, I still can't believe that I scored an interview with that cat. You know, that to me, I mean, this guy is fucking real world history, you know, like whenever it's ever written, you know, one of the biggest scandals of the 80s was that Iran-Contra, and he was the guy that financed it.
Well, that's kind of where I wanted to go with this is that, you know, that they were talking about the scandals within, mm-hmm. You know, the Reagan administration and, you know, the fact that, the Reagan administration was involved with the South American, what was it? Sandinistas. They were funding their war with the sale of drugs here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And this was during the whole Just Say No campaign.
Right.
You know, and it was just very interesting. The, where it was just like, well, we're doing we know this is bad here, mm-hmm. but it's doing some good over here.
Right.
You know, it was kind of like weighing out the difference between the good and the bad. It's just like, well, drugs are bad.
Right.
People shouldn't do drugs, but there's a lot of money being made here and there's a lot of money being filtered to this cause.
Right.
And, you know, what's the harm?
Right. And it just, you know, it's fascinating to know that whole thing and the whole Oliver North and all that other stuff, they were bringing the drugs in and they were selling it to Rick Ross to make the money to fund the Sandinistas. You know, or the fight with the, I don't know how that whole thing went. I just know that they were making their money from Rick Ross.
Yeah. And he said that, you know, a majority of his drugs came from the Nicaraguans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
so, and then here he is on the fucking Classic Metal Show.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know, again, I would have to look back to see when that was done.
It was our interview.
Yeah.
I looked it up. It was middle of 2014.
Wow. All right. So, yeah. You know, almost 7 years ago.
Yep.
This is Freeway Rick Ross, and you're on the Classic Metal Show. You'd have to be on drugs to watch this show.
How good is that ID?
That's crazy. But again, he was part of this whole documentary.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was not aware of, you know, so much of his background. I knew, you know, of course I knew who he was.
Sure.
But for him to talk about his success, in the drug trade, as it were,
mm-hmm.
talking about, yeah, I was doing $1 million a day.
Yeah.
A day.
Every single day.
Yeah. And here's a quote unquote, a black man or a person of color didn't give two shits about poisoning the African American community.
Yeah.
He was making money. He was making bank.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have to buy this shit from me.
Yeah.
But he did it. And when they were talking to him, he didn't seem like he had any remorse whatsoever. It was just like, yeah, it was a business deal.
Why would he?
Well, again, I'm not saying he should have. I'm just saying that he didn't appear as if it was just like a big deal to him at all.
Yeah. According to the write-up that I did for this interview, he made $800 million in 5 years.
Wow.
God damn.
Yeah, $800 million.
And that's what he made.
Yeah. That wasn't the gross. That's what he personally took.
Huh. And he said in the documentary, he had gaggles of guys that all were millionaires around him.
Yeah. He said that he made these guys millionaires.
Yeah. He made all these other guys millionaires and he had $800 million. Yeah. To this day, that's probably still my favorite interview I've ever done.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's iconic.
Yeah.
Because this, he was a one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't, you know, it's not that he should be worshiped in any way, shape or form. It's just like, yeah, he was kind of a one of a kind.
Yeah.
This guy struck gold. He, for whatever reason, it was capturing lightning in a bottle, as it were.
Yeah.
And he did what he did and, you know, made a shit ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you and I talked a little bit about this, but, Do you think that somewhere, somehow he put some of that money away before he got busted and went to jail?
Man, you know, you got to think that some of it ended up, I can't fathom that he just left it all in places that were found. It's too much money. You know, it's just, you know, and I'll go back just like you and I were saying, you know, yesterday or whatever. They're still finding money that Noriega buried, you know, cause he literally had to go up in the mountains and bury it cause he had nowhere else to put it. And he was okay with money disintegrating because there was so much of it that like, he took that as kind of, well, that's loss that comes with this is that I'll lose, you know, $1 million a package of money that deteriorates. And you got to think that Ross was doing the same thing. He's got to have money somewhere. The thing is can he get to it? Because you know they stay on that motherfucker like nobody's business now.
Right. Right.
You know, they're not, you know, if he tips a waitress over 16%, they're probably auditing his fucking life. You know. So I don't know. I mean, if he does have money, he's certainly not living it. You know, he's not living like he had it hidden and he went and got it. But I don't know. I just know for me, it was a true, true privilege to interview that cat.
Right, of course.
I don't care how many people he killed. I interviewed somebody that was huge in world history.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Regardless of what was good or bad, it's historic.
Rick, who are you? What do you do?
So what does Rick Ross do now? Do you know?
Well, I know he's written a couple of books and he does like speaking things. I believe he tells he's all, you know, he's all Spike Lee'd up now to where he's like, well, I'm going to talk on how inner city black people can do this or that or whatever, and, you know, get their lives in order, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, as far as I know, that's what he does. I don't think he goes to work and I don't think he works at Applebee's or something.
You know? So just think about this guy. Now, when he basically got out of prison, mm-hmm. not long after he got out of prison, you had the opportunity to speak with him.
Right.
And, as you said, it's probably been, you know, 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
So what does this guy do for an income? I mean,
well, I don't know that he needs it because he's, you know, he's a legendary figure. Like he's a big name in the black world, in the black community. So, and he's also related to other big names in the, like, if I'm not mistaken, he's like a cousin or something to Snoop Dogg.
Oh, really?
And, And he's also, you know, been heralded in by a bunch of these rappers and songs and this and that. So my hunch is that the community takes care of Rick a little bit there, you know, because that would be embarrassing for the community if Rick Ross was, you know, digging ditches or something.
Broke or destitute.
Yeah, was absolutely, you know, was just a total broke dick. But, you know, I mean, I do see him doing books and I do see him, you know, trying to do different things. I don't know. I would love to get him back on the air though. But I've definitely tried to have him back, but I can't ever get a hold of him again. Talk about lightning in a bottle. I can't believe I was able to get that interview.
Well, again, it just didn't seem like it was that difficult at that time.
Well, what, dude, I threw him an email. He had an email on it on whatever web page he was selling his book on. And I hit the email up and he hit me right back. It was like, yeah, I'd love to come on, but I need you to text me so I have your phone number. And I was like, okay. So I texted him. He texted me back. And then we did the interview like a day later.
Right.
I mean, it was like super fast. But I mean, it's fucking Freeway Rick Ross. You know, that's a biggie. That's as big as I've ever done. That's bigger than any Metallica interview I've ever done or Pantera or whatnot.
Right.
This fucking guy funded the drug war. I was as big as Larry King there for a minute. Right.
Larry King. Yeah. Freeway Rick Ross. Ross. Hello.
Rick, what's going on? What do you do and how did you make your money?
Right.
Rick, is your career hummable, Rick?
So funny. Yeah, so I found that documentary on Netflix, you know, pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
That, you know, the whole blame game, you know, with, well, the government didn't do enough. It's just like, well, maybe you should have taken some personal responsibility.
Right.
And didn't put that, you know, crack pipe dick in your mouth.
Right.
You know, well, once you do it once, man, you're chasing that high forever.
Right.
So, well, then don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're Chris Akin, of course you'll do that.
You'll try it. give it a shot. Why not?
Well, that's the downfall is that you gave it a shot.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, this is so good. I can't stop doing it now.
Yeah. Then I just, you know, luckily for me, my biggest thanks ever is that fucking heroin made me sick. Cause if it wouldn't have made me sick, I would have absolutely died from it. There's no the way people die from heroin.
All right.
And the way my stupid brain works with addiction, I would have died from heroin if I hadn't got sick from it. But believe me, that's a knock wood. Thank Jesus. Thank whatever that, you know, I didn't get addicted to it. I just was like, fuck this. I don't want to be sick.
All right. Well,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if we're done with that documentary, I actually watched a pretty good movie.
All right.
Yesterday, since we're talking sort of TV type stuff, you know how, HBO is doing first run movies now.
Yes.
They just put out a movie. I think yesterday I watched it middle of the night last night called, The Little Things. With Denzel Washington and Jared Leto and somebody else. The guy that played Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody. God,
I know of the movie. I don't know who that actor is.
What's his name? Rami Malek, I think is his name. I'm guessing. Somebody in the chat room can tell me. I think it's Rami Malek.
All right.
But they were the stars. This fucking movie was fantastic. I recommend this to everybody. I strongly recommend it to you because I know you have the HBO Max. It is a movie of a style that is no longer done, and I loved it. It's a old school, suspenseful, drama, police killing, weird movie. If I had to compare it to something, I would compare it to like Usual Suspects or Seven or movies like that. It was just so intense. It was a really intense movie. It was Denzel Washington plays this kind of old, like past his prime cop. And he ends up getting partnered up with the Freddie Mercury guy, who's like a young upstart, kind of a douchey young cop.
Okay.
And then they get onto this case, and Jared Leto for, you know, and I don't know dick about Jared Leto. I don't know what else he's been in. I know the name, I know the face, but I really don't know what he does, what else he's done. This motherfucker, I don't know if this is the kind of movie he does or what, but man, he was so good in this movie as the creepy killer guy.
All right.
He was a fucking creep to where every time he was on screen, it was literally uncomfortable to watch him on screen.
Well, that's high praise coming from you.
Yeah, dude, it was, and he was like soft spoken, and he was, you know, but the things that he said were provocative and in like a, like he was almost admitting that he was killing people, but he wasn't quite admitting it. And, you know, just his mannerisms were really creepy as fuck. But I have not been entertained by a new movie, by a brand new movie like this in a long, long time.
All right.
But I think I liked it most because it was old school. It was definitely done in the old school thing where they used the music or the score to kind of lead you into emotional places. And then they pulled the rug out from you a couple of times when there was supposed to be a climax and there wasn't. And, you know, it was just good old fashioned movie making. And thank God it wasn't the fucking Transformers or Thor or whatever, you know, whatever horse shit they make every other movie now. You know, so it's one I will definitely recommend to anybody that has HBO, The Little Things with Denzel Washington. Fucking great movie. I mean, truly a great movie.
All right. I will look it up tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know how you want to handle this, but okay. I've got some Judge Aiken stuff here.
Let me do that.
And so I want to give you the heads up about that.
Okay.
So we've got several things that Judge Aiken can rule on.
Okay.
And Mark Miller has been really good about sending in all this shit from Judge Aiken for Judge Aiken.
Okay.
Because there's just a lot of bad stuff going on in the world that Judge Aiken needs to rule on.
Okay. Well, Judge Aiken. Here's my gavels right here.
All right. But before we do that.
Okay.
As you know, that big tech, as it were.
Yes.
Is really causing an issue here with the freedom of the liberties that we enjoy here in the U.S.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. It's actually happening.
I hadn't heard.
It really is. It's happening.
Okay.
But our friend Ozzy Ace and Tim James and are the Kiss freaks.
Yeah.
They all reside in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently Google, who is one of the biggest tech giants out there.
Sure, probably the biggest.
Yeah. And one of the biggest perpetrators of stomping on, you know, liberty and freedom.
Okay.
I wish they would make this announcement here in the U.S., but they're talking about pulling out of Australia.
Google is?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
The government is introducing a law to address the long bubbling row over whether tech giants should pay for news that appears in search or is shared on their platforms.
Pay for it.
Yeah, pay for it.
Okay.
The proposed law would mandate that Google has commercial agreements with every news organization or enter forced arbitration, something Google says is unworkable.
Okay.
If this version of the code were to become law, it would give us no real choice but to stop making Google searches available in Australia.
Wow.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison told Google, "We don't respond to threats."
Okay.
So Australia is apparently, taking a hard stand.
Sure.
Google was about 90 to 95% of the search engine market share in Australia.
Okay.
So that's almost the whole thing.
Yeah, that's all of it.
Similar to the rest of the world, but other options for the search exist, mainly Microsoft's Bing. Who uses that? Do you?
Bing? No, I get rid of that shit.
And Yahoo.
Right.
But also privacy focused ones like DuckDuckGo.
Right.
That's the one you use, right? That's
what I use. Yeah.
All right. But while sites analysts, firm Alexa ranks Google as the most visited site on the internet, mm-hmm. Yahoo lies at 11th and Bing at a distant 33rd.
Okay.
All right. In 2018, a writer for Wired magazine spent 3 months using Bing exclusively and concluded that it worked fine almost all of the time.
It worked. Okay.
All right. But in very specific cases, such as finding old articles, he struggled because the techniques he used, he learned for searching using Google didn't deliver the expected results. And Google is not just a search engine. Its search technology also powers services such as Gmail, Google Maps, YouTube, among others.
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear whether this stage of Google's threat, if carried out, would affect those and other apps. Alternatives to these do exist, but are little used, and Google apps seen, let's see, alternatives to these do exist, but are little used, and the Google apps are seen as essential by many customers.
Yeah, I'm with them. I get it.
Amid a disagreement with the U.S. regulators, they found it much more difficult to sell phones in the West. That is, I can't even pronounce this. Huawei phones.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with them, but okay.
Never heard of it.
Australian Senator Rex Patrick told Google, it's going to go worldwide. Are you going to pull out of every market you are in? But Google and other companies affected, like Facebook, are based in the U.S., and the U.S. government, at least the previous administration, has urged Australia not to rush the new law, warning that it is extraordinarily and may, let's see, let me say this again. And the U.S. government, at least the previous administration, has urged Australia not to rush the new laws, warning that it is extraordinary and may have long lasting negative consequences.
Okay.
All right. While there is no exact match for the scenario, Google has left a country before due to the local laws. Google has largely is unavailable in mainland China since their disagreement in 2010 over the alleged Chinese hacking, during which it stopped censoring search results for China users.
Okay.
All right. There's also a different but similar disagreement happening in Europe. A controversial new Europe rule on copyright says that the search engines and news aggregators should pay news sites for their links. In France, publishers this week agreed to a deal with Google on how that should work, but only a handful of such deals have been signed with notable French newspapers, making it a very different thing than the world. Let's see, the wide-ranging, much stricter Australian plan. So basically what has happened with this whole Google thing,
mm-hmm. is
that they've become so large,
yeah.
that they've almost hamstrung everybody. It's yeah. just like, well, we can't exist without you.
Yeah, well, and that's nonsense, though. They should pass the law. You can't, if you know something is fucking bad for the people, you can't not pass laws to fix that, because the what's bad is too fucking big. That's the reason you pass the law, to quash what's bad.
Exactly.
Is it going to be painful? Of course. Yes. Believe me, I'm going through it right now, trying to find my way out of Google, and it is fucking hard.
Yeah, because I know you use all the Google.
Yeah, everything,
or at least you use the whole Google spreadsheets and all their.
I use yeah. spreadsheets. I use Google Docs. I use Google Sheets. I use Gmail. I use Google Voice. I used to use Google Keep, but I switched to Evernote. You know, obviously YouTube. You know, I mean, it's really hard to pull out of Google, but you know what? You got to do it. And as far as news goes, as far as, you know, these news people wanting to charge for news, let them charge for news. Would you care? I mean, look, I'm going to do this on the fly. I'm going to do this right. I'm going to put it on the screen. So it's completely on the fly. Let me put this Chrome, this interview with Freeway Rick. I'm going to put this on the screen, and now I'm going to go just at random, yahoo.com. Here's yahoo.com.
Okay.
Here's our news. Story number one, Kourtney Kardashian leaves little to the imagination in racy bikini photo. Now, this is on the fly, people. I didn't fucking do any search. That's just what Yahoo has. Number two, little known tech behind electric vehicle boom. Okay. Number three, Grimes shares new pics of her and Elon Musk's baby son. Number whatever, a whale died in the Everglades. Scientists now think they found a new species. Number five, Chipotle employee reveals game-changing burrito bowl hack. Yeah, it's like, dude, this is not fucking news.
That's not news.
Good. These companies, Cosmopolitan and Empire Finance and Celebrity E or whatever these companies are, go ahead and charge and let this shit be off. This shit should not be on there anyway. I'd be fine with them charging and getting rid of this kind of shit.
Yeah. Well, those are just, I don't even want to call it human interest stories.
No.
Those are just, you know.
Stupid.
Yeah, could you live your life not knowing about the Chipotle bowl or the Kardashian story or whatever? Yeah,
who cares? That's not news. It's not news. And if they started charging for news, then you would see that the news outlets would then have to start giving more real news.
Yeah, some the more legitimate stuff.
Yeah, because it would definitely put a damper on left-leaning or right-leaning sites. People would stop paying for it. They wouldn't pay for it. And therefore you would see these companies they would gravitate more toward the middle where the money is. You know, dude, that's been I said this to somebody this week, that is how they should solve. That's how they could solve the fucking social media problem. Charge for accounts. Even if it was $1 a month, if you charged $1 a month for social media to have a social media account, 90% of the world would get off of fucking social media.
I would agree.
And if 90% of the world got off of social media, who would that leave? That would leave the entertainers and the people that need social media to promote their bullshit. And it would take all of the fucking arguing and all of the you know, nonsense away. It would get rid of it. But nobody wants to hear that. You know, because it would cut into Facebook's bottom line and it would cut into Twitter's bottom line. You know, they make money by selling the data. So yeah, they're more than willing to fucking give it to you for free.
Sure.
But if it was just $1 a month, you would see most people quit social media.
People would just go, you know, I'm going to have to charge my debit card every month.
Yeah, fuck that.
For a dollar.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people, truthfully, if it was $1 a month, people would pick the one they like the most and they would do it for 6 months or so. And then they would quit because they would see that there's nobody to fight with anymore. There's, you know, there's no arguments. There's no hassles anymore. You know, it would just be entertainers that would be there. You know, you could see that their tour dates and shit, but you couldn't comment on it. And you know what? Good. Cause nobody gives a fuck what you got to say anyway. Even if you do pay $1 a month, no one cares.
I agree.
So, you know, these problems could be solved. It's amazing that these problems could be solved for $12 a year.
Per person,
$12 a year.
Yeah. I agree.
Amazing.
Yep. How much money is Australia worth to Google? Compared to China, Australia is much a smaller potential market. Google Australia made $4.8 billion in revenue in 2019. Advertising revenue made up most of that at $4.3 billion. But factor in all the expense and Google Australia made $134 million in profit for the year.
Wow.
For Australia only.
Mm-hmm.
To put in the context, Google's parent, Alphabet, was estimated a U.S. $100 billion or more of cash on hand to cover any revenue gaps.
Mm.
So Google has $100 billion. Dollars in cash.
Yeah.
Just on reserve.
Which is more than most countries.
Right. But it's about more than money. The wider concern is whether Google wants a modern Western democracy to showcase how using its competitors can be perfectly viable.
Mm-hmm.
Just like what they're doing to Gab or Parler or whatever. It's just like, no. We got to somehow take those guys down because they're doing the exact same thing we're doing, but we don't want you using them.
Right.
Can Australians just use US Google instead? It's possible that Google could redirect Australia's Google users to the US or another country's version of Google. That would likely strip out localized search results, but keep the services accessible. But it may also be that Google would block Australian users based on their geographical location as determined by their IP address. One simple way around that is using a virtual private network that is a VPN, which makes your computer look like it's somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Trick often used by the tech savvy to access streaming services in other countries.
Right.
Exactly how much money is issued? Let's see. What does Australia want Google to pay? Exactly how much money is at issue? And it's undecided. The proposed law involves bargaining and arbitration, leaving the matter open. If Google can't reach an agreement with the news outlet, a judge would decide what is fair.
Right.
But the government has said it wants fair payments to news organizations, which have seen print advertising revenue fall by 3/4 over the past 15 years. In contrast, digital advertising on major platforms like Google and Facebook has risen dramatically over the same time period. Would it really help the publishers? Australia has a vibrant news industry, media Titan Rupert Murdoch, who also owns News Corp, was born there. I didn't know that. His outlets would benefit as a public broadcaster, such as ABC News in Australia. ABC's funding has been cut by hundreds of millions of dollars since 2014, resulting in cuts in services, and local newspapers have also been hurt in the demise of advertising, which more than 125 News Corp owned organization newspapers going online only earlier this year, resulting in hundreds of job losses.
Yeah, well, sorry, the technology is that we don't want a fucking old newspaper.
Yeah, people don't buy paper newspapers anymore.
Yeah, you know, they go online.
When was the last time you actually picked up a physical newspaper?
Jeez, oh man. At least 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I remember when magazines, you know, were all the rage. I mean, that was the thing that we did, you know, 30 years ago. Was just like, oh man, you know, Rolling Stone is out, or Spin is out, or
Music's Bottom Line.
That too. and you know, you had the foresight to jump out of that in what, 2002?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it was just like, yeah, the whole print thing is over.
Mm-hmm.
It's over.
Yeah.
Almost 20 years ago, it was over.
Yeah, it was dying when I jumped off.
Yeah, 2002. I remember when you sold it back in 2002. You were just like, yeah, I'm done with the print version of Music's Bottom Line. And you went into Pitriff.
I did. I started Pitriff and did that for, 8-10 years, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, maybe longer. I don't even remember how long I did Pitriff, but yeah. And Pitriff picked right up, you know, it picked right up and was, you know, doing lots of traffic. It was a huge website for a minute. You know, it did tons of traffic, but you know, it died. The technology changed the way it's not that people wanted to keep getting newspapers, but Google killed it. People didn't want newspapers. As the technology got better, people wanted to read their fucking news on their phone, and they only wanted to read, like, you know, three headlines and move on to the rest of their day.
And that's the whole thing. The whole news landscape changed because people were just reading the headlines.
Yeah.
So the writers got really creative and were trying to pack the biased gist of the story into the headline.
Yeah, they do that, or the other thing that they do, and it makes me fucking angry, and I'll never click on one of these just out of principle. I hate when they write an article that says, like, if there's like a thought of Aaron Rodgers signing a contract to go back to Green Bay or something, the headline, once he's made his thing, will say, Aaron Rodgers has made his decision about going back to Green Bay, instead of just saying Aaron Rodgers re-signed with Green Bay. You know, they leave it so that you have to click on it.
Right, right. They leave it ambiguous to where you go, well, what did he decide?
Yeah, it's like, why do I need to click on your fucking clickbaity shit?
Yeah. So in order to get the answer, you have to click on it.
Mm-hmm. And then you give them the fucking cookies, and then they get their, you know, their little bit of history, you know, from you. And then your fucking Facebook is filled with shit that you've looked up.
Exactly.
You know, dude, I got asked about that yesterday. Actually, one of my clients asked me if I could set up their website so it will drop those search cookies into like Facebook and whatnot. So now I got to figure out how to do that, because I've honestly never done it. But, you know, I mean, it's obviously possible. So now I got to figure out how to do it. So it's just crazy. And you know, that's a forward thinking customer. That's a customer thinking, well, you know what? I'm going to pay now instead of paying for Google Ads or whatever. You know, crazy, right?
It is. Alan Kilcaller, you're on the air.
Yeah, fuck Google. That's what I reckon.
Oh, the, look at it. It's a Ozzy Ace. What's up, Ozzy?
I just drove in and heard you talking about media down under.
Yeah, well, we were talking about you.
I picked up a paper today.
You actually picked up a physical newspaper today?
Yeah, I buy maybe one or two a week.
Really?
And what is the reason for that?
I like the whole, you know, the sitting down in the zone, turning the page, same as magazines still, you know?
So you like to sit on the can while you're pounding one out and read the newspaper. Is that the deal?
Absolutely. Morning shit newspaper gold.
Got a cup of coffee, pounding out a deuce, reading the newspaper. That's a real man's world.
It's the same as comic books. I've tried to read them online. It's not the same thing. It's just not.
Well, I don't know if we've ever asked you, Ozzy, how old are you? Well, you have to think about this.
Do you not know?
Yeah, I do, because it's going to portray an image, isn't it?
Well, I don't know that you have an image.
I think that's not up for discussion, Mr. Neely.
How old are you, Ozzy? Just answer the question.
All right, I was born the year the man landed on the fucking moon.
69.
And then I was watching it too, Mum reckons.
So you're what, 51?
I don't know, whatever that is. It's a cunt when it's 69.
Oh, I was born in 68 and I'm 52, so.
There you go. 69.
Well, that's a good year, right, Ozzy? 69?
Yep. March the 20th. I'm a Pisces. There you go.
A piece of Pisces.
Last day of Pisces, March 2020.
All right. Well, we were actually talking.
Go on.
Well, we were actually talking about you earlier today.
Just on the newsprint, though,
yeah.
The ABC here is funded by the government, the taxpayers. So all the free ABC sport, like you see on TV and talk shows they have, and they support all the local music scene here, in a sense. But they've become so fucking LGBTQ now, and when the ABC was created here, it was taxpayers paying for free news. Well, if I became fucking prime minister here, the first thing I'll do is can the whole ABC, because it's no longer for the people, and we're the ones paying for that service. So if I ever try to get on a talk show there, there's fucking no way am I getting on there, because my views don't sit with the fucking queer cunts, right?
Just hold on a second, Ozzy. Just explain this, because, you know, here in the U.S., ABC means something different, I think. ABC here is a regular network channel, but I'm assuming that ABC over there is similar to like the NPR is here, which is National Public Radio, which is funded by the government to provide, you know, government sponsored radio. Is that similar?
Well, if you go back in the day when we had five TV channels, for example, ABC is one of the top four, you know, and that was the independent channel, no advertising, et cetera, et cetera. But, and it was supposed to be, well, you know, real news, but now it's all fucking their point of view, you know. And not only that,
it's propaganda.
Yeah, and the CEO of a taxpayers network, he earns something like $7 or $17 million a year. Get the fuck out of here, you know. First thing I do to save money in this country is can the whole ABC. We got all the sports covered on other stations. I mean, and now they've got this whole fucking Biden fucking leaning fucking view, you know. I mean, I just see it as a waste of money.
Well, let me ask you something, Ozzy. You know, you seem to be very in tune with what goes on in the U.S., and now you mentioned Biden. Is the way the U.S. goes, is that how the Australians go? Do they base their viewpoint or their political leanings the way the U.S. goes, or what? How's that happen over there?
Basically, whatever the U.S. do, the fucking Aussies like follow it. It's sort of in a sort of sense. It's like you should have seen the shock and outrage the other day at the shop when I said to the guy, "Oh, I want to buy a packet of fags." The fucking people around me jumped back 10 feet.
You were not wearing
masks.
Yeah.
And all this nonsense, you know, it's like you can't challenge anything. It's like I was at the shop, lady goes, "Why haven't you got a mask on?" I said, "Are you going to be responsible for my death? They're carcinogenic. You got nothing to do with my health." She was like, "Put the mask on or leave the shopping center." And I'm like, "Well, I've got data that shows they're fucking useless." I'll send you through an email to how political correctness is still destroying Australia. And the way that's coming through is through the school system. It's not actually like Parliament, but I meant to send you that today, but I'll do that later on.
All right. Well, so what are the regulations in Australia regarding wearing a mask? Do you have mandates over there, or is it voluntary?
Our fucking lady premier, she couldn't run a McDonald's, right? And we had this outbreak the other weekend. It's like, so she went, right, everyone locked down for 3 days. You know, Bugs Bunny has sneezed. Let's make it 30 days. It's like just reaction. But this 3-day lockdown was quite serious, and I had no idea about it. And went to the shops, and like everyone's wearing a mask except for me. And the manager in the store, like a Ralph's or whatever, everyone's looking at me because I'm not wearing a mask. There was a sign saying, you know, mandatory or whatever. And he's looked at me and given me like the eye, some millennial manager, right? And I thought, he's going to come over and say something. He didn't have the fucking balls to. He went over to the loudspeaker and said, "Everyone must be wearing a mask and blah, blah, and keep your distance." And I was nearly out of the store anyway. And as I'm about to leave, I'm walking up and there's a fucking Muslim chick at the counter. I thought, she's going to say something to me. I'm going to lose my shit here. I'm going to be like, "Fucking, you take that fucking burqa off first, love." You know? And which I've done before. And I will admit, you know, it's like everyone looked down at me as if I was the one doing something wrong, you know, and whatever. So these, like, I just went to the shops then after this 3-day thing of about a week or 10 days ago, everyone, like, there's no masks now. Everyone's fine and some people still continue to wear them and. They're carcinogenic. I mean, they're fucking only designed for 20 minutes use if you're sanding something down or whatever. And, you know, people just fucking don't get it.
Well, how has this whole pandemic affected your business? You're an entrepreneur.
Oh, fucking terrible. I've written to senators at the moment and all this because they don't want it. As much as they rave on about supporting small business, they fucking don't want to. You know, it's like the protocol. I should have been getting back paid from when I first applied because someone fucked up and, you know, and whatever, and didn't know I owned a business. And it's like, well, now it's like we can't back pay. And I'm like, hold on, fucking what, you know, look at your policy in that. I mean, it's affected 400,000 small businesses. And the silly part about it is, half of these could have been saved with common sense, as in, do you have compulsory superannuation there?
I don't even know what that is.
Employer has to pay?
So what does it mean?
Superannuation.
What does that mean? I'm going to guess we don't have it because I don't know what that means.
Super. When you retire, you have your nest egg fund.
Oh, we have what? Social Security.
About 20 odd years ago here, they brought in that the employer has to pay the employees 3% of their wage into a super fund. So when they retire, they've got something to retire on.
Yeah, because, yeah. That's called Social Security here, or, you know.
Okay. It's compulsory super because, you know, Australia will end up having all these old geezers and whatever, and not many young, you know, they reckon. So that was compulsory. So, okay, that started up 25-odd years ago or something. Like, and here's me with, say, I think I've got 200,000 in my super, which I can't access because even though it's my money, because the government's, like, fucking sitting on that. And here's the silly thing. I rang up the tax office and say, isn't it common sense to save my business? I may need 50 grand because I'm relocating manufacturing and I've got 200 there. Oh, but I can't touch it. Not unless fucking I'm losing my house and all these stupid conditions. It's like only common sense, but let's face it. This super, which you can't get at 60, I think it's 70 here now, when you turn 70. Your retirement age is now 70. Half the people will never fucking collect that.
Right.
And I can guarantee you 25% of those people won't have correct spouses in place to for that money to go to. So the government cleans up. It's fucking nonsense.
Well, you sound just about
as... The only way I could get all of that money out is if I rescinded my Australian citizenship, which I nearly fucking did.
Wow.
You marry an Oz and then you marry a Yankee or something and I'll be right.
Well, you sound about as frustrated as we are, Ozzy. I mean, things aren't any better here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's like the support for, you know, it's all fucking lies, mate. They're all corrupt, a lot of them.
Well, there you go, Chris.
I agree.
Regardless if it's here or Australia, which is on the other side of the globe, things are just fucked up.
I've said all along, all politicians. I never said in the U.S. I've always said all politicians are fucking shit.
I mean, you know, and at the moment, everyone's loaning these money and whatever. Like, you know, Queensland was supposed to, is like 20, just our state is like $27 billion in debt, which she estimated was only going to be $4 billion. It's the kids that are going to fucking hurt with it. Like, they're the ones that are going to pay for it with higher taxes and never being able to achieve the owner house or whatever. You know, it's like people that everyone just wants their hand out. Give me.
Well, you don't have any kids, do you, Ozzy?
No, I possibly may have one in the States, one in Spain, and maybe one in Ireland.
Well,
regardless
of the maybe or whatever, but you don't have any. Not that you're aware of, anyway.
Yeah. And look, to be honest with you, it really doesn't matter who I vote for. They never, ever look at the single guy or the single female or whatever. Like, you know, it's family, the single mothers, blah, blah. They're the ones that get all the fucking payouts when they do their budgets and whatever. It's like, no, we can't even get the single guy a fucking free milkshake, you know?
Well, we're in the same boat here, Ozzy, but being that you're, you know, you don't have any children that you're aware of and that I don't have any children that I'm aware of, all I got to say to you is fuck them.
Exactly. The money, if I had children, that goes on hookers. Pleasure for myself.
Well, Ozzy, again, how are you surviving over there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm keeping my head above water. I'm actually, because I'm just in final talks now. It's looking like I was probably go to manufacture in Malaysia.
Okay.
And once I get that going, I want to be getting fucking US market started this year, mid-year, you know, like, but now Biden in, maybe I could have fucking stuck with the dark side CCP, you know. it's looking like Malaysia. I mean, I can't trust what's going on over in China. Not for me. I mean, big companies like Walmart, I mean, I'm sure Walmart, like over there, would still continue to get stuff made in China, like our Woolworths here and all that stuff, but they can afford to lose if a few factories go down. But China's fucking suffering at the moment. People don't realise that. I mean, you know, and I don't know how they can block fucking Google. Like, when I'm over there, honestly, I can't even fucking look, type in fucking KISS to see what news is on it. That's blocked. Like, so if they can block all this so fine, like, yeah, I just think of some of the things I typed in over there. Like, you can't get past their blockage. So why that can't be happening elsewhere, I don't know. So the people come in and say, you've been downloading for 10 years or 20 years. I'll say, yeah, because you allowed me. Why didn't you block it like China? They can do it.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Ozzy. All right.
Yeah, so anyway, look, I like what Trump did. People are going on, oh, blah, blah. I mean, look, he's already started up this thing of his, and the inside info I got on the Trump was Biden can't do much in 4 years, so he thought, why fight it? Fucking, he'll be back harder. And it's really the people. The people have got to support your country now. It's like, you know, and try to find somewhere to buy a gun.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, Ozzy. Anything else?
Always got something to say about every subject.
Well, have you visited one of the brothels nearby recently?
Visited one of the who?
The brothels, the whorehouses.
Oh, they're all back in full swing now.
Well, have you visited any recently?
Yeah, I visited one a couple of weeks ago. I mean, my focus hasn't fully been there and whatever, and I'm just in this transition period and what have you, and there's family. I'm sort of the whole, this family's fucking, my brother and that and sister, and they're all fucking under mum's manipulation and nonsense. And, fucking like paying maintenance, divorce now, and you know, you should have got that book off you, you know.
did you have to wear a mask while she was sucking your dick?
Fuck no, no masks. The only mask is that little one you pull off her little fucking shaved pussy.
Nice.
And I say it's not a nappy either.
Wow. All right,
boys. Harlan Kill. I've been meaning, I'll send you some stuff, samples soon. And so what happened to Nam? That didn't happen?
It didn't happen. It was canceled this year.
All right, okay. Because, yeah, I would have liked to have got a stall there. But anyway, all right, I'll be talking to you. Harlan Kill, fuck you, pal, and hand job.
All right, Ozzy. Howling Kill to you too.
All right, there goes Ozzy.
Did he say howl and kill?
Yeah, he is howl and kill.
Howl and kill.
Yeah. So there you go, Chris. Things are not even as, you know, about as bad over there as it is here.
Yeah.
So goes the U.S. So goes Australia.
Yep.
So apparently goes the world.
So goes the world.
Yep. All right. Well, I think we'll come back. We'll wrap up the show. We got some Judge Aiken.
All right.
So be prepared, Judge Aiken.
Okay.
And I got a request for some Henry Rollins.
All right.
From Gary Scadra. He wanted to hear Step Back.
I swear to God, Gary is tied into my fucking I hate these songs nerve. So every week he picks something I don't like.
Yeah, he basically is tied into everything that Chris Aiken absolutely hates.
Henry Rollins, why don't you play The Cult right after that, Neely? Why don't you go ahead? Go ahead, just play everything I don't like.
Right. All right. Well, here's Henry Rollins exclusively here.
On your classic. All right, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? And you know what else is a lot of fun? The CMS Podcast Network. That's right, cmspn.com is the address. Make sure you go over there. Make sure you watch the episodes there. You listen to the episodes there. And maybe you even just subscribe so it's delivered to your phone, to whatever podcasting software you use. But do it from cmspn.com. Once again, cmspn.com, cmspn.com, cmspn.com. We'll see you next time, fucks.